iHeart Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to We Know's Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
I'm Beth Newell.
Oh my gosh.
So, I guess we have kind of a lot to talk about.
We do. Last week, the whole theme was we had nothing to talk about.
But then we actually ended up having a lot to talk about, so it seems like we kind of misstated it.
Oh, we always have things to say.
It's hard for me to remember the week. That's the thing. It's like, if I'm not writing down as it's happening.
Yeah.
To just think back, I, since having kids, have zero memory for anything that is happening around me at any time.
Well, it's like every week, everything is different. Things happen during the week, and in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a big topic in the podcast. And then we get to Monday, and I'm like, what happened? I have no idea.
Yeah. But you just brought up to me one of the big ones, which is that we went to the dual language info session for the dual language kindergarten for Bryn next year. We're thinking of applying.
Dos Caminos. I think we are applying.
Yeah, we are applying. It's just that we, like, depending on whether we get in and depending on whether we then decide to pull the trigger, you know.
So this was recommended to us by the head of daycare, and daycare is every other day in Spanish. And this program is every other day is in Spanish, and half the kids are English dominant speakers and the other half of the kids are Spanish dominant speakers. So there's a truly like immersive experience where it's like kids on the day that isn't their dominant language are surrounded by a bunch of kids who are modeling the style because they do know it, and vice versa on the opposite days.
What was interesting to me about the info session is it sounds like there's a lot of kids going into it who will go in speaking pretty much no Spanish, and they were talking about how it's a multi-year process to really acclimate, but once the kid starts like finding the rhythm of understanding, you know, everyday conversational Spanish, they're then like locked in, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before, that at age 12, when everyone starts their language typically in school, that's when you've stopped being good at learning languages.
Yeah, our country does it in the most impossible way.
But, you know, I went into this thing thinking like, you know, it's really interesting. I'm not sold on this program because I don't know anything about it. It could be great. It's a school that's a little further away. But as soon as they started going, I was like, oh, these people are great.
I was like definitely sold by the presentation, because the way they were talking about it, the teachers seemed so excited about it, and they seemed like they were constantly trying to find new ways for it to succeed and expand and get better. And they currently have first through fifth grade, and they're now going to expand to sixth grade next year, it sounds like. And
it's a big program.
It's just they were like traveling to nearby schools to study their programs that go like for more years. And it was just really, it's like just nice to be around people who are truly excited by what they're doing. And you're like, yeah, I want my kid to be a part of that, you know?
And now in the middle of it, I was like, oh shit, now I want it. And then suddenly I realized,
that was kind of hard. Like by the end of it, I was like, I don't know if we're going to get in.
And then finding out that the English speaking kids is a much bigger wait list.
Yeah.
For some reason, I assumed it would be the other way around.
I know. For some reason, I assumed English speaking would be at an advantage, but I guess I now realize in retrospect, a lot of like, if you're a Spanish speaking family and if your kid ends up being forced to go to an all day English school, then that is maybe more beneficial to you in some senses. I mean, the information they were presenting at the presentation led you to believe otherwise, actually. It was really interesting. But
yeah.
I would have thought that. Anyway, they did explain that, you know, they try to nurture kids primarily in their spoken language first. They try to gain those written language skills in their stronger language, and then that then helps them learn the other language better. So it was really interesting to see how they were like, in spite of everything that they're trying to do with these kids, they're really prioritizing the kids' main learning, the kids' main socialization,
language.
and
the families are saying at home, your job is to strengthen the dominant language, and then as they get older, it becomes much easier to transfer that to the new language, which obviously I had never occurred to me or thought of at all. And now I want it. And
yeah. It makes perfect sense why these more of these programs need to exist for kids that don't speak English, because it's just you're putting them at an educational disadvantage if they don't get some sort of like a writing and reading attention early on.
They really sold the idea that like everybody benefits from this. And it's that the balance of it was really interesting, where they really are balancing, you know, everything they can, then that's the best way to support every kid in the room.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I mean, obviously we're very lucky that this is a part of the public school system and we don't have to, you know, pay for this.
So we're going to apply.
We'll see what happens. I felt good about it. I don't know why. I just feel like optimistic. And also I just kind of feel like if he's meant to be in it, he'll be in it.
Yeah,
but if he's not, he won't.
If he doesn't get in, then he goes to the kindergarten near us, which is where his pre-K already is. And we really like that school. And it's closer. So if we don't get in, there's a benefit of him being able to walk to school in a few years.
There was one question I wanted to ask during the presentation, but I was too afraid to, which is just that, well, because, you know, we've been talking a lot about like work and where we're going to be living long term if we continue to work in the entertainment industry. So part of me was like, if we were to move away from here, like temporarily or, you know, unexpectedly come back, like, is there a way for a kid to continue being a part of the program? And then I was like, if we ask this question, it's going to sound like we're like a foot out the door already. And I can't, I got so invested. I was like, we can't jeopardize.
Yeah. This. I started asking questions. I was like, well, my son's already. And
You asked a question after the presentation just to brag about your son knowing some Spanish.
Not just. I was genuinely curious if English speaking kids who know a little bit of Spanish was an advantage. Something they took into consideration. And I found out, no, it's not.
Yeah.
So I got to brag about, I don't know. I'm proud of my child. Sue me.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day happened.
Valentine's Day. Okay, we're moving on.
Yeah. Yeah, baby. Unless you have more to say, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I thought it was really interesting hearing them talk about the priority that certain families and students get based on, like, they're trying to get a mix of English and Spanish, and they're trying to get a mix of all the schools in town and the different districts or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And they, but then there's certain things, like you're saying, like the ability to speak a little bit of both languages is not really necessarily any kind of advantage. And it throws up a lot of like ethics concerns. Like they were also saying that families with one sibling in the program were given a priority for the second sibling because they're already more invested in the program and they know what's up, which makes perfect sense. But then they also have to factor in like people who don't get their foot in the door with the one kids, like they're suddenly cut out of this program altogether. It's just like, I find the ethics of that so fascinating.
Well, I empathize so much. I do so much casting, for improv and story pirates and stuff. And, you're trying to get a balance in all sorts of ways. And for each individual, that might be an advantage or a disadvantage. And it's not totally fair. And it's like, they were doing a great job of being like, hey, we're going to be as transparent as we can about this. But it's like, I also understand the argument of like not bothering to show people how it works because you're just inviting.
Yeah. No, places. But
I thought they did a good job.
They were being pretty transparent. They were being surprisingly transparent about it. But yeah, there's got to be some other moving parts in there. I mean, and they kind of hinted at that. Like they have other concerns about the school and the students who aren't in that program. You know, I just think it is fascinating that if you are trying to do like the best thing as a whole for the community or this group of people, just in life, you're always given these decisions where it's like you can't make it fair for everyone. It's just not going to be.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of like pick your battles. But I don't know. For some reason, that aspect of it was so fascinating to me because I know other, like in New York City where there's like school lotteries and stuff, people are facing this kind of thing with so much more drastic results. And it's just...
Yeah, you can see it. It's so easy to, depending on what side of whatever you're on, to immediately feel so strongly about one thing or the other. But I at least this program, you could tell they genuinely were thinking, like, whoever ends up in the program, we want it to be the best possible learning environment for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't necessarily make it fair for getting into it. But ultimately, the kids that are in are then served best.
Yeah. Anyway, you want to talk about Valentine's Day? We went on a date night.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even mean that, but let's talk about that. We had a date night.
What were you going to say about Valentine's Day? Oh, you're going to talk about Bryn's Valentine's Day. Okay, let's talk about that.
We made cards. You very rightfully, early, you were like, you should get Valentine's. And I was like, we got time, right? And you're like, you're going to want to do it now. And I was like, all right. And I got them. And my one goal was just to get Bryn to write his name on every single Valentine's. And it took a week and a half and two full nights of sitting down and me plagiarizing three of the cards.
Yeah.
Writing Bryn's name.
That's a lot of focus to ask of him.
He did it, though, and he's now much better at writing his name.
That's good.
He's not great at doing the letters in order. He'll start the B. Spatial awareness could use some work. He'll start the B, like, all the way near the right, and then he'll run out and he'll do the next letter, like, all the way on the left. And then suddenly he'll just get really excited about the stem of a letter and it'll keep going down to the bottom of the page.
Yeah, he is just like you. He gets really excited about one aspect of something. Yeah. It's just...
He follows his heart, lives in the now. But we got it done, and I decided on no candy. Because, you know what? There's going to be a plenty of candy there and everyone's going to be happy.
Yeah, I told you this. I looked for candy for his cards, but I felt like it had to be a very specific kind of candy in my mind that was like the least annoying for parents.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I'm not going to do lollipops because that's like going to be in someone's hair or something. And
what you were aiming for, though, was great. A single wrapped Lifesaver gummy.
I wanted something that wasn't chokeable. So I was like, a gummy, an individually wrapped gummy would be perfect. But of course, such a thing does not exist. Anyway, it was totally unnecessary because he got so much candy from kids. He got like 8 lollipops or something.
Oh, I knew he would. It was
so
fine.
It didn't, none of it
goodie
mattered.
Bags and stuff.
Yeah, some parents are giving like full goodie bags with toys and trinkets.
So that was Bryn's Valentine's Day. So exciting.
Yeah.
Not nearly as exciting as us having a freaking real date night.
A real date night. I don't remember the last time we went on a date prior to this.
Probably your birthday or Valentine's Day before.
So like 7 months or something.
Yeah. I had a great time, love.
It was good. We went to a really nice restaurant recommended by a friend. It was really good.
We went to the Inn at Pound Ridge, and it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
We went really early because our reservation was really late, and we got an early table.
I also have to say, out of character for us is that we like gorged ourselves on food, but a lot of the food that we gorged ourselves on was like light food, like seafood and salad. And I was like,
because we're so skinny these days.
We're so skinny these days.
Oh, listeners, we haven't talked about this.
We've both lost up to 4 pounds.
I lost 10, baby.
Anyway, I like kind of couldn't believe it was. That was the choice we made on our big night out.
Well, I was like, well, I definitely want a steak. And we ended up with kale salad, crab, like crostini.
The crab crostini was really highlight of the evening.
Monkfish and a lobster.
Yeah.
I actually left so insanely full. And like,
yeah, well, we did get
full,
like dessert after that. Because then I was like, wow, I can't believe how light I ate.
Yeah, let's get the biggest dessert in the world.
Yeah,
we couldn't finish it.
Finish it at all. But anyway.
So good.
I'm sure everyone enjoyed that description of the night.
What did you do for Valentine's Day? I feel like we've had, it seemed like the most carefree date night. For some reason in my mind, I was like, other date nights don't go as well. I'm like, they're fine. But this one was really fun.
I think it was sort of like a lot of things in our life. Everything's just calmed down a little bit where you suddenly, you know, 5 years into parenting are like, oh, I have a little bit of space to think
now.
Yeah,
we have a babysitter I know and trust and I can just text them 4 days before.
Yeah, like the way our babysitter showed up, we were just like, hey, what's up? And then we left and we didn't like have to tell her where all the bottles were. You know, like it was just like,
good luck.
She was fine. She knows our kids really well. And we were like, yeah, they can stay up late, whatever. So that was great. It's nice to have certain things just go smoothly for once.
You know what's nice? Things not being terrible. It's sort of nice. Sometimes I like to indulge in non-terribleness. You know what I mean? You know what we have to talk about before we move on?
What?
We're doing a live show, Beth.
We are doing a live show. Oh, it's pretty exciting.
Can you believe it?
It's in towards the end of April.
April 23rd.
We are...
We got guests. We got big guests.
Well, first let's tell them where it is because it's at Littlefield in Brooklyn.
At Brooklyn.
We got some very exciting guests.
You might know him from a little podcast called Stuff You Should Know. Mr. Chuck Bryan is going to be there.
Or Movie Crush.
Or Movie Crush.
We
Fantastic.
Also have Abby Crutchfield.
Speaking of crushes, Crutchfield. Abby Crutchfield.
Speaking of injuries, Abby Crutchfield, very funny comedian. You may know her from her Twitter, or she's had a variety of appearances on TV. And we also have Ophira Eisenberg.
Oh, yes, from NPR's
Ask Me Another.
I'm genuinely so... We sort of put this together fairly quick. You did. And everyone we asked said yes.
We're so excited. It's going to be a really great group of people, fun venue. And, you know, we're going to do some of the bits you know and love and get some information from some maybe more intelligent parents than us.
Yeah. So you can buy tickets now. Go to our website, weknowsparenting.com, and click on live appearances or whatever the tab says.
Or go to Littlefield's website.
Yeah. Buy some tickets. Oh, we're going to be plugging it for several weeks, so get ready for the plugs!
This next segment is called We Don't Knows. It's where we discuss some of our parenting failures and hands up in the air shrugs.
This is where we discuss our...
Whoops.
Oh, did
Sorry, Siri had to weigh in.
Siri, stay out of it. It's where we discuss a bunch of our hands up in the air moments. I think that's what I was going to say.
Shoulder shrugs.
Theory ruined whatever the awesome joke I was going to say was.
Yeah, you always have such zingers.
Oh, my gosh. That's why they call me the Zing King.
We got plenty of podcasts left for you to just nail it.
I got
just
so much tape left. We're going to record until you laugh. Okay, so Beth and I...
We're talking about parenting fails.
Yes, Beth and I got into a bit of a fight. I don't want to talk about... the fight. I think
it's going to come up. There's no way it's not, but for now, sure, we'll leave the fight out of it.
I feel like we've worked through that, but it was a fairly significant fight, not the biggest fight of our careers.
I think what was most significant about it is that our children were awake in the room listening.
And as old as they are.
and they sort of understood the words we were saying.
And it was totally different. Because Maven and Bryn were fully aware that things were getting tense.
Well, they're also so much themselves, which is just everything rolls off Bryn's back. So he was giving like play by play of the fight and like getting in on it with like color commentary. And he was like, "What don't you understand, Daddy? What?" And he'd be like, "Mommy, you're not listening." Like he'd just like parrot things that we were saying. Like,
I totally forgot
that.
It was
so ridiculous.
I was like, I was like, "You're not listening." And the brain's like, "What aren't you listening about?"
Yeah, he would just like interject and be like, "What?"
And
Maven, classic Maven, was just taking on all the emotions of it and just getting sad.
She's getting overwhelmed.
She came up to me afterwards and she was like, it like made her so sad that it made her try to like think of pain on her body. And she was like, "I need a Band-Aid." She like held up her finger. Like, anyway. Yeah.
Well, so we got in a fight and we went separate ways. And then you went in the living room, I went to the bedroom. And Bryn came to talk to me and you started crying. And that's what I think scared our children.
I don't think they were scared. I think they were just like, "What?"
Well, Bryn was concerned. He came to me and he was upset with me. And he goes, "Daddy, you made Mommy cry."
Yeah, but that
was
still...
We have to make her feel better.
Yeah, but that was just still him like participating in the theater of it all. Like he didn't...
Well...
At no point during any of this did I feel like he was deeply emotionally affected. He was just
kind
of like...
Oh, you didn't see it. You didn't see it.
No, but he like... He's such an actor. Like I saw him look at me and like decide he was going to say that and then like go find... Like he was just... He's performing.
You know, well, you know, he does exactly what I do. And so when you say that, I felt myself getting defensive because I'm like...
That is what you do in a fight is you just start performing an argument. And that's my biggest complaint at the end of all this was just that you I like try to raise a very small issue, and then you get into the performance of a fight, and you start saying things that don't make any sense.
Don't want to get into it.
Okay, fine. Anyway,
Bryn, I related exactly to how Bryn reacted to this fight. When he came to me, not like Maven was like getting a little overwhelmed.
Well, both of them came up to me and were like, "You okay, mommy?"
Yeah, and a little bit later, I cried a significant cry just thinking about my kids going through that, and they were so sweet. Bryn was concerned, but he's exactly like me, and that his mode was, "I'm gonna fix it." You know, he was like, "It's good. We're good. Are you okay, Mom? You should say sorry, Daddy." You know, he was performing like he's turns into the adult and like talks like how I talk. But there was like, I understand that that's my impulse is like, I want people to be okay. And so I come in and like, I'm a stable figure and I like, you know, talk as the adult in the room and try to make people feel better. And Bryn like was 100% that. And I think Maven was probably much more like you in that like she's taking on everybody's anxiety and that's overwhelming. And Bryn's trying to like dissipate. He's trying to push the pain away from everyone. How did you feel about it? Because there's a moment. Sorry, I'm chewing ice.
It's impossible for me not to relate it back to the argument, which is that I think it's not that I don't think Bryn was trying to help, because I think he was, but I think there's a blurred line there sometimes in performing that where you and him are like performing a solution and not thinking about, like, not tuned in.
Well, this speaks to the heart of, a little bit of an argument today, and you're very much not like the, you know, I'll say things just to like cool things out, just to make myself and hopefully other people feel better so we can talk about things. And that to you is like the theater of it. You're like, that's bullshit.
Because you say things that aren't true and they're like untrue attacks on me, and I can't just like hear that and not be incensed by
it. I'm not even talking about that. Well, you did something today that I appreciated so much, and it was such a little thing, which is you got annoyed at me and you sent me some text explaining what it was, and you added one sentence at the beginning of the text that just said, "I understand that you're just trying to help," or something.
I said, "I know you don't know you're doing this," or something.
Yes. Yeah. And then you said, "Here's the problem." And you have no idea how much that helps me then actually listen to what you're trying to say to me. Because the second it's like an attack, I mean, I think it's true for so many people, I'm defensive and I'm just looking for what's wrong with this. And just a tiny compliment sandwich or positive sandwich of like, listen, I know your intention is not this, but here's what I need. And it stopped me from writing back a text of like, well, here's how I'm right. And I just thought about it. And I feel like that's not in your nature. That's not normally something you do, is to show me that you understand that I'm, you know, that you see a positive in it. And I got to say, that's all it takes for me. It's like valid, just one like fig leaf and then tell me everything that's wrong with me, then I'm fine. So thank you.
Yeah, I just have to constantly tone police myself that I don't ruffle any feathers.
Okay. Boy, I made a big mistake of using the term tone police during our argument.
Oh, yeah. When you accused me of tone policing in that argument, it was a real low.
I didn't know. I was just like, what is a technical term for what you're doing, which is, you know, let's not. Yeah, let's really not.
That's why I can't deal with you when you just want to do like a flip out argument, like I shout things at you, because nothing you're saying makes any sense to me. It's like, it makes me feel so insane. It's
you,
just like,
you make me feel the exact same way. Where I'm just like, what reality are like, you talking about? And then you come in and you throw a firebomb of accusation and you walk out of the, you know. But everything you describe about me that you hate, I'm like, and I'm sure this is true for so many couples, where the thing you describe about me, I'm like, that's you! That's you! And I just, you know each other so well. Like, 'cause I think we've been doing great, and we have both put a lot of energy into trying to speak each other's languages. And that day, I think, was like, we've taken like five steps forward, and that was one big step back, where I personally like fell into every insecurity and defensive thing from our full history of being a relationship. I immediately accused you and defended myself from you doing things that you have done that you hadn't done yet.
Well, here's the thing. This is why I'm telling you, it's like your response is very escalatory, because I, the argument started because you sent me a text and I said, hey, can you not text me this way, the in the way that you texted me?
Okay, you just performed it so sweetly.
I said, I walked in the room and I said, hey, I don't appreciate being texted like this. And you somehow escalated this argument into like you telling me like that, like, for years I've been horrible. Like, it was just like verbal diarrhea. Like, it was it's just like a lot to take in. And I know you don't mean it, but I also don't want to stand there and listen to it.
We realize today you were mad at me for sending you what you saw as judgmental and passive aggressive text, which I still don't agree with. But you sent me very passive aggressive and attacking text today, and it took all my might to not like.
You just
be
told me
about
I sent you a really nice text today.
Well, at the end of it, you did. That's where it started, and we got into a fight. And at the end, I was instantly forgiven, because I was like, I don't give a shit, because you just showed me that you.
Well, okay. I think it's problematic that you're not allowing me to talk about the details of the argument, because you're just saying vague.
You're right.
You're just making really vague accusations towards me that I'm not allowed to defend with the facts of reality.
Well, I think the thing that's important, what I'm interested in talking about here is it's a new era of like fighting with your kids around who are listening and understanding like they never have before. What's the rules? You know,
well, for one, I think I would be careful what you say in front of them.
Yeah. But also,
you're not necessarily doing.
But at the end, I made a big point with Bryn where we talked for a long time in there. He's like, you made mama cry. And I was just like, yeah, you know, sometimes adults fight and I shouldn't have done that. And I should say sorry to mommy, shouldn't I? And I was like, taking responsibility, because I'm like, this is what I would want Bryn to do. And I went in with him to you to like hug you and say sorry in front of my children. And
yeah, I mean, it ended up working out okay. I honestly think it was like a learning moment for them, and they were not harmed by it. And I felt like, you know, like Bryn was saying things towards the end where he was like, sometimes big people get sad too. And it was just like really like profound. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess like you guys are great with it. Like it was like, maybe I should have been crying in front of you sooner or more often. I don't know. Like it was very weird.
I cried about it later, just seeing, because, you know, Bryn is 4 and he can be a real shit to his sister, like mean. And I'm like, should I worry about his empathy? But then real things happen and his empathy is on display. And I don't think it was fully performative. He felt it and it made me happy. And it made me love you more. And I love you. I'm not going to end with a joke.
All right. I love you. This next segment is called Would You Knows. It's where we posit a parenting hypothetical to one another. Peter, do you have one?
Posit. This is the only time in my life I use the word posit. Yes, I have one. I have one for you.
Well, posit it to
I'm gonna posit it up. Here's the scenario. You come home. It's bedtime for the kids, and you walk through the door, and Bryn walks up to you, and he says, Beth, don't freak out, but Bryn and I, we Freaky Friday'd. It's me, Peter. I don't know what to do. And then Peter walks out from the back room and in a Bryn voice says, Mommy, look how big I am. And starts running around the room.
Haven't we done Freaky Friday hypotheticals in the past?
I couldn't remember.
I think we have.
In what scenario did we do it? Did I do it with me and Bryn?
Yeah, it was. I think it was something like that. I don't. It was many episodes ago.
Well, Bryn's a different person.
I'm having
now.
A little deja vu, as if I've freakied this Friday before.
I feel like this Friday has been freaky before.
I've felt this freakiness before.
I had the same feeling, but I couldn't remember it. And I feel like, you know what? We could redo it because Bryn is a different kid, and maybe we did different people.
Okay. So the question is, what do I do?
How do you process it? How do you go on? Like, assume it's like the movie context where we don't know how to fix it.
I guess, you know, like in the movie scenario, it's like I get my girl gang together, all my trusted girls, and they believe me because we trust each other and we believe the crazy shit that we've all experienced.
And you got a Marco Polo thread going.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, guys, remember how we all did that spell on the new moon? Well,
you didn't tell me it was you.
Somebody fucked up, all right? That's all I have to say. And so I get the girl gang together. and, you know, they come over wearing, like, I guess, like, pans on their heads or pots on their heads as protection. They've got hockey gear on. It's a movie.
Are they conspiracy theorists?
No. It's a Hollywood movie, okay?
Okay, so they got pots on their heads.
Pots on their heads.
To
they
protect
got
them
hockey
from
gear.
The Peter-sized...
Yeah, because you know Bryn. He's having a tantrum by the end of this day.
Oh, you know what? We did the... This is similar to the Peter-sized Bryn and Bryn-sized Peter. But this is a full Freaky
we
Friday.
We also did... Yeah, we did like a... Honey, I Blew Up the Kids one type of one. Remember? Wasn't there like a...
I think that was the Bryn-sized Peter. Peter-sized Bryn.
Okay, anyway... So,
Girls are over. They got their pots and pans and hockey gear on.
Yeah. And, you know, one of them has like a box of Valentine's candy to lure him around where we need him to go. You know, I don't know. We get some handcuffs from a sex shop. Hilarity ensues.
Why does it have to be from a sex shop?
Where are you going to get handcuffs on a minute's notice?
The army surplus?
The army surplus?
Not the army. The handcuff store.
Listeners,
the police store.
If you are currently planning a murder or abduction, tell us where you're getting your handcuffs. Because
when the sex, we want to know. Sex handcuffs have like a safety release?
I mean, probably, but...
Not that I know. Oh, I once had novelty handcuffs on a school trip in Washington, D.C. in middle school, and they took it at the airport security. And I remember being really embarrassed. They're like, what are these?
That
I'm
is
like,
really weird to bring on a school trip.
I bought it at a store on a school trip.
Oh, okay.
Because that's a cool thing to have.
Classic move. I do you remember my cousins were talking about their school trip to Germany that their high school does, and there was one town in Germany or like the Alps, like the Swiss Alps or something, where all the kids would stop and buy like souvenir knives and swords and stuff, and then they would like ship them back home. But I was just like, why, year after year, why are you bringing the kids to the same place where they're all buying knives?
Why do you keep going to the sword shop?
But it's just a classic, like, public high school move for them just to be like, here we go.
Go into the sword shop. All right. So your whole plan is to detain Bryn because he's too strong? But he's older. You can reason with him. He's going to know something's weird.
I have to say, another reason why we'd have to go to the sex shop is because they have the handcuffs that are like fuzzy, and they would have S&M restraints that are like soft hold.
Okay,
like,
if you put Bryn in my body in handcuffs, he's gonna start screaming, "You're hurting me!"
Yeah, and then our affable neighbor walks in, and I'm like, "Sorry, we never told you we were into this. We were just trying to keep it private."
You're like, "Sorry, I'm just trying to have sex with my husband." And Bryn's going, "What's that? Sorry, come back later, please." That's a disturbing scene we just wrote.
It's not, though, because it's all played by an adult male actor, which is the genius of the whole conceit.
That's right.
Please,
so you can have,
Hollywood, call me. Yeah, I'll draft it tomorrow.
Comedically sexy scenes with your son if it's in your husband's body. Not weird or a gray ethical area at all.
It's played by a chubbier John Hamm.
Wait, why am I not cast in this?
Because...
Wait, you think I'm chubbier than John Hamm?
We were actually just saying the other day that you look a little bit like Peter Sarsgaard. I think he'd be great for the role. Mm. Just these, like, the neighbors are like, he always was sort of creepy, you know? Like,
you know, I'm a professional actor.
Did you see
right?
our neighbor run naked through the streets? Well, he always was a little creepy. Remember, he was doing those weird dad commercials?
He's sort of acting like a child. Have you noticed? He called me a fart face. All right. Well, what do I do? What is Peter in Bryn's body gonna do?
I mean, you have to go to school and daycare, I guess, just to cover for us.
I tell you what,
nothing seems off.
Or you start logging a lot of hours of incredible Instagram material.
The idea that you think that you are funnier as Bryn than Bryn is as himself.
Oh, Bryn is hilarious when he just starts talking like an adult. If I was in his body with his voice,
no.
You don't think I could be funny?
I don't think you would be funnier than he is naturally.
You'd
be trying too hard. It would be too much man pretending to be a child.
I'm really good at playing kids.
This is the part of the movie where your character realizes he needs to quit acting.
I'd be the most incredible child star of all time. I would go and use that voice to go.
The actor playing Bryn, we'd be like, "Hey, kid, like you were actually too funny in that take, and in this scene, you're actually trying to appear like Peter's inside your body, so you can't be that funny right now."
Whoa, what an insane acting challenge for a child. First of all, why are you casting this movie? This is a hypothetical scenario.
This is me pitching it to all of Hollywood right now.
The movie should be us trying to film this movie, because I want to see the scene where the director is trying to get a kid to play an adult in a kid's body who's trying too hard and not as funny as the real kid.
Everyone just fell asleep at your comedic adaptation.
This is your idea. All right, so who plays Bryn in the movie? AKA me. And who plays you?
Who plays your adult body?
Well, I think
I just said Peter Sarsgaard.
No, who plays Bryn? Who plays the child?
Who plays Bryn?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't follow a bunch of child actors online.
All right, who plays you?
I guess Maggie Gyllenhaal. You know, they
is
get to work
married
together.
To Peter Sarsgaard?
They're married in real life. I guess they work together.
All right, guys, we got to call up Sarsgaard and Gyllenhaal.
I think they'd be really excited to do it because they'll get to work together. You know. Anyway,
great.
Give us a call whenever you guys want to make this.
How do the girls solve the problem in the end?
Oh, the girl gang. Yeah, I forgot. You mean
you really cut out the girl gang? With
Melissa McCarthy and Tiffany Haddish and. Aquafina. So my girl gang shows up and they I mean,
it's their spell that got us into this.
Yeah, it's their spell. So
it's your problem. So you have to fix it.
They have to reverse the spell. And then, you know, series of incantations. They realize the missing ingredient is sort of just hair from the drain of the bathtub. It has to be both your and Bryn's hair.
And a positive vibe.
Yeah. Raider.
All right, great. We're back to normal. Hey, you know what? Even though this was all your fault and your Marco Polo girl gang, the work you did to put us back together in the right place makes me realize how much we need you. Beth's a hero. Thanks, Maggie Gyllenhaal. And now it's time for Listeners Wanna Knows. We're going to read some emails from the email mailbag.
Okay, so this is a quick one. This was in response to the conversation we were having about what to call little girls' vaginas. And
the most responded to topic we've ever put out there.
You listeners wanna know. So this is from Kate, and she says, I thought you'd be happy to know that I had regrets about classifying all my daughter's female anatomy as vagina because, in hindsight, I wish I had used the actual anatomical term vulva, which just sounds worse, hence why I didn't teach it the first time. Anyways, my daughter went through a short phase where she called it her vaginasaur, and it was seriously one of the best parts of being a parent thus far. So I think we found it, the much sought-after slang term. For a little girl's vagina, it's vaginasaur.
I'm still partial to fine china.
Fine china. Oh, that's very creepy. Peter Sarsgaard, my husband.
Oh, Maggie. No, I agree. It's not as good of a name, but it did make me laugh.
Yeah, vaginasaur, I think, is pretty good.
And it's empowering.
It's empowering. It's close enough to the real word that they're going to know what the real word is and people will know what they're talking about.
Yeah, but what happens when they injure their vagina and they go, oh, vagina sore?
No one would ever say that whole word.
Vagina sore?
Also, it's so much more unlikely for a girl to get hit in the genitals and to groan in pain like that.
Oh, I got kicked in the vagina.
My vagina's hurt.
I'm sure you can hurt it that way.
Well, you know what? You're right. Thank you for bringing up that real concern, which is what do you do when she groans out the word vaginasaur once she gets hit in the vagina? And I guess what you do is just say, yeah, that's what she calls it, and she's hurting right now. So if you could all step back, I'm just going to take her over here.
Well, my worry is that you wouldn't take it seriously because you're just like, oh, that's what she calls a vagina. She's just talking about vagina. I'm going to stop paying attention. I'm just saying, think it through.
Right, because when boys go, oh, my balls, then I know to take it seriously, and I'm very serious about what's happening.
Don't joke about that. Oh, boy.
You raise a lot of important points.
Oh, gosh. Here's another email. Ready for this? Thank you, Kate. That is probably the best one we've heard. A lot of good ones, but thank you. This email is in response to another topic we had recently. Last week we talked about...
What's it about?
We talked about, I think, Vietnamese parents that use a whistle to potty train their children at a much earlier age. And we were like, that's crazy. What?
And, I mean, that's not exactly what we said, but...
that's my summation. We were like, that's crazy. What?
Ooh, my balls.
Ooh, my knowledge. Ooh. This comes to us from Rachel. Subject line, peeing on command is amazing. Out of context, that's a great sentence. Hi, Beth and Peter. Burp, excuse me.
I thought I was supposed to respond.
Hi, Beth.
Hello.
Peter. I'm waiting.
Thanks for coming.
Welcome. I was listening to the Everything Is Ellipses Fine episode, and I heard you mention the Vietnamese parents training their kids to go to the bathroom on command, and I had to write in. It is literally the greatest thing ever. My husband is from India and they do that there as well. I was very skeptical of it because I was like, how do you go around all the time and keep your child from having accidents? The first thing is no one is upset when a child has an accident. There is no shaming or upset, just a factual shit happens to everyone attitude. This definitely changes a child's mindset about peeing and pooping. They aren't ashamed to let you know that they have to go because they do not get yelled at or treated badly for it. Also, stone floors make cleaning up messes so much easier, all caps. Literally, I cannot stress enough how much the environment is made for a child to poop on the floor in India and have it be no big deal. Not the reason they put in stone floors, but it is a great thing to have for this. My in-laws were always wondering why we didn't just let our son run around naked and do this from a form of potty training, but cleaning poop or pee out of a carpet is so much more of an issue than they knew until they visited. Have you ever had to scrub poop out of a carpet? It takes so much time and products and is stressful because no one wants poop stain on their bedroom floor. Stone floors are a wipe and a mop scenario, changes the game entirely. Also, the family structure is different. There aren't just three immediate family members, mom, dad, siblings, living in the house. There is typically all families are different, but grandparents, uncles, aunts, etc., all living either in the house or close by to help with child rearing. So the mother is not alone in trying to implement this. When our son lived in India for a year, it was my father-in-law who actually ended up doing most of the potty training. And within about 2 months, he was about 20 months old, my son was fully potty trained this way. It changed life because I just had to hold our son over the toilet and make a susu. It's S-U-S-U. Susu.
Susu. I think it's like shoo-shoo. Maybe.
Shoo-shoo.
I don't know.
Noise. And he would pee or poop. You need to call in, Rachel, and make the noise on our voicemail. And once you start looking for the signs, oh boy, do you see the signs that they gotta go. Most Western parents also know that their kids need to go because almost every mom or dad I know can tell me what their kid's poop face is. To laughing to tears emoji figures. So I don't think it would be a stretch to say it could be done here. I think the family and cultural structure is the major inhibitor. You need to do it. You need help to do it. And we don't have a family-oriented society like they do. Always, I hope to enlighten you about an alternative. I hope I enlightened you about an alternate mode of potty training. Definitely something I couldn't do here, but over there with the right setup, it works amazingly. Have a great day, Rachel.
Fascinating. Yeah, that seems like it works out really well for people who live in a society that supports that kind of thing.
Yeah. Picturing a bunch of people around and a stone floor and the idea of like one of our kids running around naked, I'm like, that sounds almost fun.
Almost fun.
To potty train.
Well, I think if we lived somewhere where it was warmer outside and we had a backyard, we would have let our kids run around naked lot more.
That's how my brothers and I were potty trained. Yeah. My mom said, like, we are in across the world, England, Israel, Singapore, and she would just have us naked outside. I remember my little brother running around the naked outside, and the 17-year cicadas came out. In the Chicagoland area, and it's insane. And I was afraid of the bushes, but my little brother learned to pee by peeing on cicadas outside. And she'd have them pee on flowers, and then she'd go inside and she'd draw little flowers with markers on the inside the toilet bowl, and they'd pee on the flowers.
Actually, this reminds me. I took the kids to the playground the other day, and Maven had to pee, so I went brought her into a corner of the playground and had her pee outside for a second.
What?
And then brought her back. And I didn't think I was there with our friend, Bryn's friend and his dad, and then this other random dad. And I didn't think they noticed, but then his kid had to pee. And then the other dad, who I didn't really know, was like, oh, you can just go to that corner over there.
You know, that's the pee corner.
And I was like, did he see me? And then his daughter wanted to pee. And then he pulled out of a bag, like, a toilet seat on stilts, like a little toilet seat.
And it was weird. He went and then used it over in the
corner. Then he went and brought his daughter over there. And I was like, wow, you came prepared. And he was like, yeah, let me know if you want to use it. And I was like, what? Like, but it was just
how old was his daughter?
She was 3. But anyway, it was like, you know, a winter day, and like we had like 3 kids peeing outside. It was.
I support what you did. I don't know if I'd be carrying around a toilet seat for a 3-year-old.
I mean,
interesting.
I was thinking it would have been good for me to have more like tissues on me or wipes, which I didn't. I took the stroller to the playground, so I had like nothing. But it worked out fine. We didn't get pee on us, so that's a win.
Well, I just had a very distinct memory of being old enough to remember, but my mom having me poop in a parking lot in like Florida or somewhere. It was like on a grassy area.
Yeah.
But I remember she's like, I gotta go. And she's like, just poop here. And I remember being ashamed, but relieved. Anyway, thanks, Rachel.
Sometimes you gotta poop.
Sometimes you gotta poop. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. If you'd like to reach out, send us some advice, a story, a question, you can email us at weknowspod@gmail.com. Also, check out our website, weknowsparenting.com. You can buy some merch there. Also, you can buy tickets for our live show on April 23rd at Littlefield. Check that out, weknowsparenting.com or at Littlefield website. Beth, social media?
You can check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at We Knows Pod.
Again, check out the new season of the Story Pirates podcast. And have yourselves a great week. Bye.
Bye.